So what is your dissertation about? Is it PhD?
Yeah.
In what field?
The title is like this, study of spectre.
What?
Study of spectre.
Mm-hmm.
In audio media and video in Northern Thailand.
In video, Northern Thailand?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So spectre is a more like a Western term to call ghost.
Ghost?
Yes. But the spectre more describing the visible dimension mm-hmm. of things. So, yeah, so I was very interested in the traditional practice mm. using the spirit and ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the after introduction of the visual media,
mm-hmm.
all the belief of the ghost mm-hmm. is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And, but still, in early media, there mm-hmm. is a belief of the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm studying the transition period mm-hmm. of introduction visual media. And before introduction visual media, there was a traditional practice was mm-hmm. using the medium of mm-hmm. mediumship.
How is the traditional belief in Korea? Of course.
Actually, Korea was quite similar like Thailand. Before Korea were modernized,
mm-hmm.
there were shamans mm-hmm. and ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
And very scientifically, we have very good technology of using mediumship mm-hmm. and all those shamanic beliefs.
Mm.
But after we colonized, those beliefs became taboo and
mm-hmm.
became more mystified. Before it was more science and technology, but mm. it became a taboo.
I mean, that's the same thing in Europe, yeah. I mean, the 16th, 17th century, I mean, spirits, you know, tree spirits and things like that existed, you know, but the moment science came in, you know, we can't see them, okay, so they don't exist.
Yeah, before, everything has a reason mm. by the wisdom, traditional mm. wisdom. When we put base mm. or furniture, mm. that everything should have a reason,
mm-hmm.
follow the wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
But now it became a taboo and mm. unbelievable thing.
Such a pity.
Yeah.
But did you see some ghosts?
No.
No?
No.
There are lots of ghosts.
Yeah, that's why I interviewed two Dong monks mm. of their experience of ghosts. I mm. was that's the primary reason why I interviewed mm. two Dong monks. Mm.
But you know, I mean, science wouldn't believe it, yeah? Because there's no proof. Mm.
So
you can prove animals, you can prove people, mm. but you can prove the moon, you can prove the sun, yeah? But ghosts are not provable.
Yes.
Devas, you know, especially devas are not proof.
So I regard the ghost as a media
mm-hmm.
of memory.
Mm.
So this
I wouldn't say it's memory. It's a special ability of the chitta. It's a special ability of the chitta to see these things, yeah? But because of the taboo that you described, people who actually see these things still exist in Korea or in Europe, but they are made fun of. They say, you're crazy. Yeah? That doesn't exist. Yeah? Oh, I see this. Yeah? Oh, there's nothing there. Huh? So that is the problem. Yeah? Because other people don't see it, so people who see these things, you know, are made fun of, you know, or said they are crazy. Yeah? But that doesn't mean these things do not exist. Yeah? I mean, spirits do exist, devas do exist. Yeah? But they normally don't have so much interaction with the human beings At the time, you know, when the people still believed in them, I mean, the interaction between these two worlds, you know, was manifold. Yeah? But now that they don't believe it, only these shamans or whatever who can talk to these, you know, I mean, still have their contact with. But most of the people, I mean, they just don't see it. Yeah?
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
According to the Tudong monks,
mm-hmm.
They see ghosts. It's yeah? very obvious that they see ghosts.
Mm.
And they are telling the relationship with the human being and the ghost
mm-hmm.
To the village people.
To the what? To the village people.
They see ghosts, but it's prohibited to see the existence of the ghost to people.
They don't tell it to people.
They don't, because it's not dharma. Mm. They, even though they see ghosts, but they don't tell in the ghost stories to village people because it's not dharma. Telling the...
Yeah, that's right.
That's what I heard.
Yeah. Mm. Normally, these ghost stories you can hear under monks. Yeah. But I mean, there's no point in telling the people, because I mean, what is much more important at that time now is to tell the people the Dhamma, yeah, about their lives, why they are in the situation they are in, yeah, and what can they do to better that situation. That's much more important than telling about ghosts, because I mean, ghosts live in their own realm, yeah. They have their own problems. So, I mean, and before, you know, lots of, especially, I mean, you might have noticed, I mean, Thai people are especially afraid of ghosts. Even if they don't see them. But when you look from the aspect of Dhamma, I mean, of course, monks who are in the forest, you know, will experience ghosts and devas, you know, or even hungry ghosts that are much worse than ghosts, much more often, because that's where they live. And they do have a way to protect themselves, and that is the Dhamma. The moment you enter your citta into this state of upachara samadhi, you might see them, you might be able to interact them, but you can close them off for interfering with you. Because some of these ghosts, you know, can be quite notorious. When they see a monk, yeah, they want something from them. Yeah. The moment they feel, you know, this person can help us, you know, then they come. Yeah. And most of the time, you know, ghosts just want metta. Metta is loving kindness. Huh? That's what they want. That's what they're after. So, I mean, in most cases, we just give metta, you know, to these beings, and then they disappear, just like animals. Yeah. I mean, the dogs come by, you will see it, you know, when you're here, and then you stroke them a little bit, you know, when they have enough, then they just pass by. Yeah? All what they want is attention. Yeah? That's the same with the ghost, and that's the same with, especially with the devas. Yeah? They do like, you know, to be around, you know, people who have a pure soul, you know, or pure citta, and receive the metta of these. It's for them like just like drinking, you know, clear water. You know? It soothes them. And devas you will find a lot around, you know, pure monks, I mean arahants. That's, they like to hear Dhamma. So then the arahants give them Dhamma. Just like, you know, like we normal monks, you know, give Dhamma to lay people. Yeah? So they give the Dhamma to the devas. Ghosts and hungry ghosts cannot listen to the Dhamma. I mean, that is painful for them. Especially hungry ghosts. Yeah? I mean, when you do a Buddhist chant, for instance, you have to be careful if there are hungry ghosts there, and they listen to these Pali chants, yeah. They cut their arms off, you know, they tear everything out because they know they are not pure. So it makes a lot of suffering for them, you know, if you chant something, you know, when they are hungry ghosts around. People know, you know, our citta knows, you know, if we are impure. And they are in the state of deprivation because of the impurity. Because they have sinned or because they have gone against the five precepts. But there are all kinds. There are some funny kinds of ghosts, there are some normal ghosts, there are some hungry ghosts, all sorts of things. But for us as a Buddhist monk, that, yeah, I mean, they're just like, you know, when we see dogs or chickens and things like that, it really doesn't interfere with our life. So more worthwhile is, you know, looking for the disappearance of Dhamma in the world. Because with this modernization, you know, of the whole world, now China modernizes, you know, so slowly, you know, Korea modernizes. Where's the religion going? The religion is disappearing. Yeah? Now we have a new religion. It's called money. Everybody is after money. As if it would give something. I mean, even if you have 1,000 rubles, you cannot buy happiness. You can just buy enough alcohol, you know, to drown your misery. It's that what is missing, you know, and it is also starting to miss here in Thailand, because in Thailand they are all now also after money. You see that in Korea, yeah?
Yeah. But what? Now I'm staying in Thailand more than 4 months. Buddhism was never an important issue in my life. And I didn't give a big intention to the Buddhism. But now I'm surrounded by... and Korea was half Buddhism and half Christianity. One of the only country in the world that Buddhism and Christianity is equal balance. So in wisdom in Korea, so we are half is the Christianity, and in Christianity context, wisdom means you are, when you say someone is smart and clever, which means he's cunning.
Yeah.
And he is able to betray someone easily, but he's not. He is not betrayed, but he is able to betray someone. In modern world, in Korea, wisdom means he understanding the system and he can betray. But now I'm in the Thailand in 4 months and. I learned that in this society, the Buddhism society, has a totally different context. And especially when you say someone is smart and has a wisdom, which means totally different. Like in Korea, smart and wisdom is more related with the using context and understanding and can betray. But here, it's more like about how to be control yourself, that is more about the smart and wisdom.
Well, in Thailand, you do make a difference between smart and wisdom. Smart means the same thing as in Korea or as in the West. Being able to use, you know, the means you have at hand, you know, for your material gain. But wisdom means, you know, you're wise in the terms that you understand Dhamma, that you understand karma. You understand much more of the spectrum of life. You understand birth, rebirth, and so on. You understand that good deeds will lead to good actions. That is wisdom in Thailand. And this wisdom has no value in the West, because it doesn't buy you anything. So that's our wisdom that we used to have in the West is replaced by knowledge. How to do. Yeah? That's what you call smart. You know, how to use these things, you know, for your own proliferation or for your own material gain. Yeah? And people do that. You know, big corporations do it. Every individual do it. Yeah? And if he finds a job that earns him a little bit more, then he goes and gets that job. Yeah? He's not wise enough to see, oh, if I do this job, you know, I go against my morality, yeah? I shouldn't do that, yeah? But now he sees only the money that his job gets, you know, so I mean, he's smart, you know, using the means at hand, you know, to get what he wants, yeah? But here in Thailand, it's still, you know, it's still, Buddhism has still intoxicated, yeah? I mean, intoxicated in a good sense, yeah? The population so that they know, you know, there's karma behind everything. And karma can be something really scary. Mm-hmm. Yeah? We have the saying, don't do unto others what you don't want others to do unto you. Now, turn it around. Whatever other people do unto us is what we have done unto others before. Yeah? And that is scary, yeah? Because everything what happens in this life is based on the karma of our previous lives. Yeah? I mean, in the West they don't believe in previous lives, so they believe in just, you know, take whatever, you know, they can have. Yeah? And that what makes it really, really bad, you know, our society. Yeah? but here. But also, you know, I mean, I believe also in Asia, most of Asia, probably also in South Korea, I mean, you know that there's an afterlife. You know that there's a birth again and a birth again. Yeah? I think that is still more in Korea than in the West. Yeah? So you know if you've done something bad, okay, let's go see in hell. Yeah. Don't you say that sometimes? See you in hell?
No.
But it is, you know, it probably is, yeah.
Yeah, so what I'm learning now in my 4 months of experience in Thailand is I'm surrounded by Buddhists. Mm-hmm. And that philosophy. Mm-hmm. So what I realize is the Buddhism is the big part of me, especially when I say good things, good behavior to others, like a you know, natural good, there was no contact and there was no, I haven't think about what is the meaning, the context of good, okay. But I just doing good thing to others and thinking good, there's no context, but actually, this context is come from Buddhism. That's what I learned from my experience.
Yes, in the beginning it is from Buddhism that gives you the teaching. Yeah? But then, over time, if you get a little bit more sensitive what is happening in your citta, you will learn the context. If you do good, good comes back to you. Yes. I mean, what else can we wish for? Yeah? We want that people are nice to us, aren't they? Don't they? So, but first, we have to be nice to others, so that others will be nice to us. Yeah? That is the context. And the context in the West is missing because the time lapse is too big. We start doing good, you know, let's say, you know, even if we start early with 10 or 20 years, and then say, okay, now we will do good, you know. What do people in the West expect? Maybe at least 1 year it should come back. But the context of Buddhism is it takes about 30, 60 years to come back. So people don't see any point in doing good because, I mean, it's too far away. Yeah. I'm saving money, just, you know, so that I can use it tomorrow. Yeah? So I want to have the results of my actions of today, tomorrow. Yeah? So, I mean, Buddhism takes a step back and looks about 1, 2, 5 lives. And then it sees, oh, there I did good, and that was the result of good in the next life. Ah, there I did bad, that was the result of bad in the next life. Karma is one really... a very important part in the concept of Buddhism. So if you don't understand karma, or if you don't say, you know, karma exists, yeah, then we cannot practice, or we cannot better ourselves, or we cannot change the situations of our lives. Yeah? So don't expect anything, you know, to come back within a week or so, or a month or a year. Yeah? Do it for the long term. Yeah? Do it for the next life, yeah? Or do it for the end of this life. Yeah? For instance, in our karma, they say, if you are generous, this generosity will come back to you. So people start giving you things. Yeah? Like, for instance, here in Thailand, yeah? I mean, you come here to the monastery, everything is given to you. It's out of the generosity of the heart of the Thai people that they give. And I mean, you've been in Thailand for 4 months, you know, I mean, you know that generosity. You've seen it everywhere, yeah? It is one, you know, I mean, that it is, it's sadly to say, it's probably nearly the last column that is left of Buddhism here. Yeah? Because everything else, you know, I mean, is not so important for the Thai. But generosity, young, prevails, yeah? And you will see it in the monastery. I mean, if you see people coming in the morning, you know how much food they give, you know, and they're happy. Yeah? Why they're happy? Because they do good. Just think about, you know, I mean, you when you say, I mean, you didn't see the context of good behavior. Yeah? I mean, if you behave good, we feel good. If you think about, for instance, if you think about, yeah, giving somebody a present, you don't feel unhappy. You feel quite happy.
Yeah.
Then we give the present to this person, and then we also feel happy. And then later on, you know, maybe after decades, you know, or in the next life, somebody, you know, all the people are giving us, you know, wow.
May I ask you a question?
Yeah.
And if you do something good and you expect that it comes back even in the next life or next, isn't it still somehow a little bit egoistic to expect a reward, even not now, even later? Shouldn't you do good just to do good without any reasons? I mean.
Yes, you can do good, you know, but you have to learn to do good first. And the important thing is, no human being does not something expect back. If you go to work, you expect money to get. If you bring your bank money to the bank, you expect that it you can withdraw it any time. Yeah? So why should Buddhism be without any expectations? Huh?
Well, I thought that one of the important things in Buddhism is to get rid of your ego, to let it go.
Okay, but we have to start slow, yeah? I mean, if you come from St. Petersburg, you know, in traffic to Beijing, you cannot enter your journey in Bangkok, yeah? You have to start in St. Petersburg. So most of the people, you know, who enter the train of Buddhism, you know, to get rid of the ego, I mean, they have to start where they are, yeah? And what people lacking in the West is generosity. Just this basic generosity of giving, you know? And see the people are happy, yeah? Happy in not giving, yeah? That is, of course they know it comes back, yeah? But why, you know, why should they be stupid, you know, and say, you know, I don't like this kind of giving, I don't give anything because, I mean, I expect something back? No. That's a happy giving, you know, and happy receiving, yeah? So, I mean, if you're here on a very busy day, yeah, I mean, you see a lot of food stands around here that give things for free. Yeah. When you take these things, you know, the people thank you. Yeah? What kind of, you know, that is the attitude of this generosity. They thank you for allowing you to make merit. And we need lots of merit. Yeah? We need lots and lots and lots of merit. Yeah? Not only, you know, maybe to go to the heaven, but also as a human being, you know, to live comfortably. Yeah? So, I mean, that is the idea. Yeah? And there's nothing wrong with being calculated. Yeah? Yeah? I mean, if you have the options, you know, of you know, let's say you have 10,000 rubles, yeah? Or whatever, you know, whatever currency. What is it? Won, yeah? In Korea.
Won.
Yeah. So, I mean, whatever currency you have a lot of money, yeah? Then there are five different banks, you know? One gives 1%, one gives 2%, one gives 5%, and another gives 50%. Which one do you choose? 50%. Yeah? It's not because of our greed, you know, it's because we are smart. Yeah? We don't want to waste that money, you know, but yeah, so. And that's the same thing with generosity. I mean, yes, sometimes they overdo it a little bit, the Thais, yeah? So, I mean, where do they get the most interest is? Of course, if they go to a monk with the highest purity. Yeah? That's where they get the most interest. That's why lots of people come to a place where there's a monk with a high purity. Yeah? And less people go to a temple. But even though, yeah, in general, they do support everyone. Yeah? But of course, they're not stupid, you know, and they say, yeah, that's much better. Yeah? And it is all laid out by the Lord Buddha himself. Yeah? I mean, if you give it to a normal person, you get back 100-fold, yeah? If you give to a pure person, you know, to a Sotapanna or higher up, you know, I mean, you get uncountable times. Yeah? So why be so stupid if you have the choice, yeah? But that doesn't mean, and this should not mean, that you should not give the poor person who needs the money or who needs the food more than anybody else, yeah? Because that would also be karma, yeah? Mm. Kind of bad karma, because then you would be, whatever we do, you know, will happen to us, yeah? Huh? I mean, if you look at a beggar, you know, who really needs, who is starving, you know, and you say, maybe I should give it to the monk, yeah? And maybe the monk gives them to the beggar, you know? I mean, then you will be placed in the situation of this beggar and seeing that somebody else gets a food, yeah?
I have a question.
Yeah.
This is just from my reading. Mm. And from my reading, what is the difference of the Isan temple from the central Thai temple? Mm. Is in central Thai, people donate by individually. So temple remember how much one person donate. Mm-hmm. But in Isan village, not one person, but one village, mm-hmm, to donate, mm-hmm, to the temple, not individual. So they don't know how much one person who...
They do know it now.
Still doing.
They are also changing.
Changing.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've seen that when I went through the small villages, you know, even there, you know, the people are very proud. You know, for this window, you know, I offered 1,000 baht, you know, for that cupboard, you know, I offered 3,000 baht and things, and they want their names written on it, you know, and that doesn't make any difference, you know. I mean, it's not a good, you know, I don't encourage this kind of thing, yeah? I mean, it's much better, you know, to give as a whole village, you know, nobody knows how much has been given. It still happens, you know, on Katina, yeah. Mm. Or on big occasions, you know, where they all put the money together, you know, and then offer it, you know, to the monastery. Yes, I know, I mean, it's not a good habit, yeah? Because that, you know, that is too much of an ego, you know, I want to, you know, I mean, I, I offered sometimes, you know, when you go to a certain monastery, you see, I mean, you see the wall around the monastery, and on each stone, you know, it's written who offered it. Yeah? I mean, that's too much. Yeah? Okay, now, let's focus it. Karma is a very important aspect, and you know, and over the days I will talk more about it. But let's focus on the principles of the Buddha's teaching. Yeah? The principle of the Buddha's teaching are the Four Noble Truths. Yeah? The first noble truth is dukkha. Yeah? I mean, it is as difficult to understand as karma. Yeah? What is dukkha? Yeah? Normally it is translated as suffering. Yeah? Well, ask yourself, are you suffering? Yeah? Ask the people around you. Nobody is, or hardly anybody is suffering. But do we have dukkha? Yes. Lots of dukkha. So what is dukkha? Dukkha is restlessness, boredom, dis-ease, uncomfortable feeling. Yeah? And then, I mean, the whole day is full of it. Yeah? So, it's pain. It's very painful feeling. And it is, you know, at the topmost, it's suffering. Yeah? So if you do not understand the first noble truth, there is no need for the other noble truths to hear. Yeah? So a lot of people, you know, also in the West do make this mistake and say, no, I'm not suffering. I mean, life is not suffering. Yeah? But it's full of discontent. Yeah? You drink because of discontent. You eat because of discontent. You move because of discontent. You go and read a book because of discontent. You talk to your neighbor because of discontent. Everything what we do, every single action is born of discontent. Because if we are contented, we don't want anything. The moment we are discontented, we want this or that. You know, we look at our smartphone, you know, and do this, play this or play that, you know, or do things like, or go drinking, you know? Whatever there is. Huh? So dukkha is the first noble truth. And if we understand that every one of us has it, then we can understand also the second noble truth, that all our desire leads to dukkha. We want something that we can't get. We don't want the things. Yeah? I mean, you don't want to meet this person? That's dukkha. But you meet it. Yeah? Somebody that you love leaves you. Dukkha. Yeah? All these things. So desire is the root for our dukkha. That is the second noble truth. The third noble truth is that there is an end of dukkha. Yeah? And the fourth noble truth is that what the Tudong monks and in the forest monks practice is the path that leads to the end of dukkha. And this path that leads to the end of dukkha is normally sila or morality. That means the five precepts. Samadhi, the ability to concentrate. And panya, wisdom. So, first sila, first morality, these are the five moral precepts for lay people who work around. Yeah? Not harming any living being. Yeah? So the rule actually states, I train myself not to harm any living being. Living being is also these, yeah, the animal. Yeah? The second rule states, I do not take what is not given. It's not only stealing, yeah? If you don't know if this thing has an owner, don't take it. Yeah? If you assume this doesn't have an owner, just like you go in the forest and you see a fruit, you know, it doesn't have an owner, you can pick it, yeah? But if you see it's in a garden, you know, somebody, yeah, you shouldn't pick it, yeah? Because it has an owner. The third noble truth is sexual misconduct, yeah? And sexual misconduct is big in this world, yeah? I mean, having, you know, when you have a wife, you have to be faithful to this one wife. Yeah? Yeah? If you have a second wife, you know, or if you go outside, you know, and fool around with this girl or that girl or this woman or that woman, that is sexual misconduct. The same holds true, of course, for the woman. She has one husband, you know, and that's fate. Sexual misconduct is also relationships that are in dependence. That means a teacher and a student, sexual misconduct. It used to be, I mean, in Europe, I can remember there was a law against it, yeah? You were fined, you were put into prison, yeah, 100 years ago. Yeah? A professor with his student, yeah? Because they're all independent, yeah? A company chef with his secretary, yeah? Or, you know, a minister with his secretary, or anybody under him, yeah? That's all sexual misconduct. Now look at the world and you see only sexual misconduct. Lots of sexual misconduct. The fourth precept is not to lie, not to use harsh speech, yeah? Speech that hurts other people, yeah? And for Westerners, not criticizing, because that is harsh speech. Yeah? We try to put some people down by criticizing, not, you know, not correcting them. I mean, that could be helpful. Yeah? And the fifth, no alcohol, no drugs. Yeah? So drugs are opium and so on, and yaba and crazy medicines, everything, ecstasy and all these things. Yeah? Everything that takes our mindfulness away. These are five precepts. The importance of these five precepts for lay people is also, if you keep these five precepts, you can or you have the right to come back as a human being. If you break these five precepts, you will go into the lower realms. The lower realm starts with animals, ghosts, or hungry ghosts, demons, and hell. So breaking these five precepts gives you a ticket down. Yeah? Keeping them gives you the passport to come back as a human being. Yeah? Just like we have laws, you know. Of course, stealing and killing, you know, is also forbidden. Yeah? So if they catch you killing somebody, they put you into prison. Yeah? We believe these laws. Yeah? Nobody wants to go into prison. Yeah? If you steal, you go to prison. Yeah? And other things. Yeah? If you lie in front of the court, you go to prison. Yeah? All these things. Yeah. So, but these five laws, or these five precepts, are universal law. It holds true for any being in any world. Yeah? Be it a deva, be it a heavenly being, be it a human being, be it an animal. Yeah. An animal that kills, you know, goes down. Yeah? Doesn't have a chance to go up. Yeah? An animal that doesn't kill, like cows, you know, or horses, you know, or elephants that even help the human beings, go up. Yeah? They slowly come back to the human world. Yeah? Or dogs that don't kill. Yeah? But animals that, wild animals that kill, yeah, they just go down. Until there are ants or, you know, or mosquitoes or things like that. Yeah. It's very, very, very difficult to come back from the animal realm. Yeah. So, I mean, and you go to the animal realm, how? If you kill a lot of animals. So, if you're a butcher, yeah, that just, you know, lives off, you know, and that is included in the Eightfold Path or the... I'd normally just take Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. Right livelihood. You know, you choose a livelihood that doesn't go against any of these five precepts. So, if you break these precepts, yeah, I mean, you will have to receive, I mean, if you say punishment, you receive your punishment, yeah, for a certain while, yeah. So I mean, either you go to the ghost realms, yeah, or you go to the hell realms, yeah. For instance, for sexual misconduct, stealing and killing is always hell realm, yeah. And stay there for a certain time, amount of time, and then you can come back to human realm. Yeah? It's just like you go to prison, and then you release and you come back to the society. So I mean, from today on, just keep them. Yeah? We still can have lots of fun. Yeah? There's no precept that tells us not to drink coffee or not to eat ice cream or chocolate, you know, I mean, or go tour around the world, go touring around the world, you know. Yeah? There's still a lot, yeah? Or writing dissertations, you know, it's not against the precept. But just don't do anything. Yeah? I mean, it's detrimental. Nobody wants to go. Do you want to be a ghost?
No.
Not really, no? Because what the ghosts see that humans can do, they're really envious of it. Yeah? I mean, the humans can build, you know, all these, you know, these buildings, the skyscrapers, you know, or they can farm, you know, and harvest, and the ghosts just look at that, you know, and they can't, you know, they can't move these material things, yeah? They do have their fine material things, but, you know, I mean, these coarse materials where we build all these cities, where we build all these farms and things like that, they can't. But they see it. So it's their envy. Yeah? And you don't want to be in hell. No. So if you don't want to, stay clear. Yeah? Yeah? Just don't break these five precepts. So the next important part is what I told you, you know, this morning, samadhi. So we choose one object, be the breath at the tip of the nose. Do not follow the breath, just stay there. Or the mantra or mental recitation of Buddha, 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 Buddha. And we do that at least for an hour, sitting. Walking you can do more. Most of you, you know, I mean, you can do 2 hours of walking meditation. Especially in the night when it is a little bit cooler, it is easy to walk, yeah? Much more easy. Do 2 hours, yeah? And then you will see something, yeah, that is called kilesas. Yeah? When we follow the breath, or when we observe the breath at the tip of the nose, or the same thing happens when we observe the Buddha, yeah? What happens is, sooner or later, and later can be, you know, can be weeks, you know, or can be months, depends on the person, yeah? The mind becomes calm, it really calms down, and thoughts become less and less until thoughts stop. And that's where we become a thought. Because if thought stops, the ego disappears. So don't be afraid. Just go there. Yeah? Let the thought stop. You know, I mean, they bother you all the time anyway. Yeah, you didn't invite all these thoughts. Yeah, sometimes you invite them and they don't come. Sometimes, you know, you invite them, they come. But 95% of the times you didn't even invite them. No? So stop these thoughts by when the thought comes or when a memory comes, by returning to the Buddha or returning to the breath. Yeah? And that will, it's just like a train. Yeah? It's just like any train. It's like, you know, like learning to walk or learning to talk or learning to think. It is a training that doesn't have effects instantly. Yeah? You didn't get up, you know, when you were 2 years old and could walk. Yeah? No, you had to learn. Get up, fall over, get up, fall over, get up, fall over, get up, fall over. And that is the same thing for training. Yeah? For training, you had to concentrate on the breath. Yeah? Or training to concentrate on the Buddha. I mean, there's a thought, okay, pull it back. Yeah? So get up means pulling it back to the Buddha or pulling it back to the breath. Yeah? Then we fall over, another thought comes, then we pull it back. Yeah? And that is the world. Yeah? And we have to be really patient and we have to really have determination that we going back. Yeah? Because for you, you know, all thoughts, you know, about your dissertation comes up, you know, and so interesting and you want to follow them. But now it's the time for meditation, stop it. Yeah? The good ideas don't don't get lost. Don't believe these kilesas, they try to pull you out. Ah, that's a great idea, I have to write it down, and then you're out of your meditation. Now, you want to practice.
Well, this is right down for what you're saying.
That's exactly how you never can come calm. And you want to get calm. Because the moment thought stops, then you will experience a different realm. It's a realm of experience. There's just experience. But you feel safe. Because the moment thought stops, worry stops, fear stops, loneliness stops. All these things, that are indicted, or indiced, by thoughts. If you don't think, we are not lonely. That's just these things. And you feel contented. Some of you can feel very happy. Some of you can feel very peaceful. That depends. That is different for each character. But you feel contented. And you don't want to get out. But the next, that was one thought, I don't want to get out. And that is a thought, and that pulls us out. It's very important that we develop this basis. It's called basis of practice or kamakana. It's a basis of practice. If we have this, if we can concentrate, and then you will also notice for your dissertation, if you learn how to concentrate just on this point, writing something is very easy. Reading something is very easy. Because you don't get distracted by all your memories and thoughts that come in and, pull you off the subject. So that is something for the world. But we don't train it for the world, but we use the same thing. Because with this kind of samadhi or with this kind of concentration, something is going to develop that is called sati, or awareness. When you close your eyes, you're still aware. You're still aware of the six senses, like smell, touch, hearing, tasting, except for seeing, and thinking. We become just aware of these things. And the part of wisdom, that is the third part, of the fourth noble truth. The first was precept, the second was samadhi, and the third part is wisdom. With wisdom, we need the power of concentration to look through, to understand. But to understand in a very different way than the world tries to understand. To make the heart, now we are going to teach the heart to understand the nature of ego. What is ego? The Lord Buddha gives us five groups that we normally call ego. One is the body, very obvious. That's me, that's mine, that's myself. Feelings, that's very close. That's me, that's mine, that's myself. Memories and association. What is an association? When we see this, we say spittoon. That's the association, memory. Belongs to memory. Thoughts, short form of thoughts, ideas and things like that. And consciousness. Now mix these five groups together and then you have the person that you are. But he has the same five groups as you. But his mixture is a little bit different than yours. Just like you have five different kinds of fruits. Somebody likes more tomatoes in it, he puts more tomatoes in. Somebody likes apples, so he puts more apples in. The taste and the color of the juice, when it's mixed together, is different. So the groups mixed together gives all this variety of people that we have on this earth. Not only on this earth, but also in other realms. So wisdom is to understand that these groups are not me, not mine, not myself. That's the principle of anatta. That all these groups are impermanent. They arise and cease. And that all these groups have dukkha, are discontent. Because of their arising and ceasing, because of they are not me, not mine, Now, just like, you know, give you a simple example, you have a bad feeling. You say, I feel bad. Nothing you can do. If it was truly your feeling, you can take this feeling, chuck it out, and put a good feeling. But you can't. So the path of wisdom is to understand how these feelings come into being, how they arise and how they cease. What is connected with them? So in order for us to understand, you know, what is this conglomerate that is what we call self, we have to take first the first group and investigate it. That's a body, That's a body, I mean, how much of this body do you need to call it yourself, You need only the brain? Do you need the face? Some people don't have any arms. Some people don't have any arms or legs, you know, they still call it me, So what is it that, what is this body, what, which body part would you like, Or, that you call yourself, The body is the most important, is the most important object that we need to understand because we are so attached to this body. And you will see it the moment you start to meditate, the only problems that arise are within the sphere of the body. Now it's so painful, now it's so painful, now it's a hurting moment, now I'm or tired. The body is tired. It's not the mind that is tired, not the body itself. This body is nothing else than a very complicated or complex biological robot. You know what a robot is,
Robot.
If there's nobody behind the robot who puts in the program, the robot stands still. Doesn't do anything. But if somebody keys something in, then the robot starts working. The same is with this spot. The citta is the driver. That's why we have to pay attention to the citta. Or you can call it the driver in the car. If the driver in the car sleeps, the car will not move. If the driver in the car, you know, wakes up, you know, and wants to go here and wants to go there, then the car moves. So the car or the body is the vehicle for our citta to do things. But it has become so attached to this body that it combines the driver and the car into one thing. And now we have to separate it out. There is the body, there is the citta. And we see it the first time when we are in samadhi. Because then the body is completely relaxed. If the citta is calm, if the citta doesn't want anything, there is no pain, there is nothing. The moment the citta wants something, then there is all this interaction. So it's like a driver in a car. You know, the moment the driver wakes up, you know, he wants to do this or that or that, go here or go there. The moment the citta wakes up from samadhi, it wants to do this or that. I mean, wants to drink or wants to go to pee and, or do something, change, you know, look at the news and things like that. So this is something that we have to understand. We are not the body. And the body only lasts for 70 years or 80 years or 90 years. How long did it take you to train this body? First you had to learn to walk. Then you had to learn to talk. Then you had to learn to sing. 24 years when you go to university. 18 years when you just finish high school. Or 16 years. 16 years training. Because when you look at a baby that just comes out, it can't do anything. It has to learn, learn to eat first, and then learn to move, Just like with the robots, with the mechanical robots. We have to learn, I mean, people, are trained on these things, you know, to move them. So the chitta needs to train this body, you know, so it can move. It cannot from birth on. Everybody knows that, you know. I mean, if you have seen little babies, they just lie there, you know. The only thing they know is how to smile and how to cry. So they need to learn how to express themselves. They need to learn how to walk. Yeah? They need to learn how to talk. And then, you know, that's not enough. You need to learn how to think. Yeah? And with all this, you know, conventions and things like that, you know, all this thing, how to deal with this world. Yeah? That's what you learn. Yeah? And then you have it, 18 years training. Yeah. And then you have it for maybe 30 years or 40 years, and then it starts decay. Yeah? And then you see, you know, over 50 parts of the body, you know, start to fail. Yeah? Be it, you know, just be it the muscles, or be it the arms, or be it the legs, or, you know, be it internal organs fail. Yeah? Until, you know, and that, you know, that goes on until we die, you know, with 80 or 90 or 70. Yeah? So, we train this body for 18 years. We can use it for 30 years. And that's already very maximum, yeah? And then we need to watch it, you know, how to decay. But that's not enough for us, you know? We want another life. Yeah? The moment we die, you know, we already want, you know, we want to do it again. Yeah? And we want to do it again. Yeah? And that's millions, yeah? Or billions of lives, we've gone through this cycle, yeah? Birth, death. Birth, death, birth, death. And yet we can't get enough. One more life. Yeah? It's just like, it's an addiction to this body, yeah? It's just like an addiction to these video games. Yeah? Even a video game, you have to train how to use it, yeah? Before you can play it, yeah? And you know how people get addicted to it. They can't stop it. Yeah? And that's the same thing for us, yeah? This body is nothing else than a video game that we do over and over and over again. And that is the truth that the Lord Buddha saw and told us, hey, stop, got enough, yeah? And that's why he showed us the way out, yeah? So that we don't become reborn again. So that's why we have to investigate this body. What is so beautiful about this body? Everything that goes in? Nice clothes that we put on, yeah? Perfume, yeah? Or food, or drinks, yeah? And what comes out? Shit, piss, sweat, all the things, yeah, we don't like. So this body, you know, exchanges everything that is beautiful and nice and smelling to something that is bad smelling or stinking, yeah, and disgusting. Huh. And that is a truth that we have to understand, yeah, so that we can get detached from this body. Yeah. And that is also the way out. Yeah. Because otherwise, if you don't step out, we will go up and down in this roller coaster, yeah? Because there is no way out, you know, and the Lord Buddha said, you know, the jumping board, you know, for getting out is the human life. A human life is really precious, because it shows us the difference between dukkha and sukha. Sukha is all the pleasant things, you know, where we're happier and fine, yeah? And dukkha is all the unpleasant things. Yeah. So, sukha is content or happiness, and dukkha is discontent and unhappiness. Yeah. Because the human life is the only life that has sukha 50%, dukkha 50% at most. Yeah. The life above us have more sukha. So, and you know, every person who is content, he doesn't want to change. Yeah. People who are too much discontent, we also know, yeah, from our experience with society, cannot change. Yeah? So all the beings, you know, below us, you know, starting with the ghost realms or animals, they can't change. Yeah? So we are the only, as a human being, we are the only form where we can really jump out, where we can really take the fourth noble truth and implement it. Yeah? To jump out, yeah? Out of the cycle. Yeah? How many times do you want to reborn? How many times do you want to play the same video game over and over again? Are you not bored? Especially when you think about the long training times. And then when you think, you know, you're not old enough, so the body has not broken down yet. But I know it breaks down. And it's not comfortable. If you can't use your leg anymore, you know, because, or if you fall down the steps instead of walking down the steps because your knee just doesn't work anymore, yeah? Things like that does happen, yeah? And then look at the older people, you know, how they walk through the street, yeah? Because that is what is, you know, that is what we can do. Yeah? So wisdom starts here, yeah? Investigation of the body. Yeah? What goes in, what goes out. Yeah, that's one thing. Training of the body from birth to death. Yeah? Because we have to die. Yeah? Who wants to die?
Nobody.
Look at the old people, they don't want to die. Maybe now, you know, because we're still young, we say, oh yeah, it doesn't really matter because it's not yet close enough. But the closer death comes, you know, then we say, no, we don't want to die. We don't want to die. And it is there. Yeah? So, I mean, if you want to go on, you know, I mean, we have to be born and we die. Yeah? And we have to be born again and we die. Until we choose the path out, until we see this body as not me, not mine, not myself. It's just a car, yeah? And once your car breaks down, you replace it with a new car if you have the money, yeah? And money comes in handy because it is keeping the five precepts, you know, means, you know, we have enough money to buy a new human body, yeah? So the body is the first investigation object. Eh? And then, you know, comes of course feeling. Bodily feelings, there are two kinds of feelings, three kinds of feelings. Eh? There are pleasant feelings, unpleasant feelings, neutral feelings. Eh? And then there are two kinds, bodily feelings, mental feelings. Eh? So all in all, there are six feelings. You can separate it until 112. I mean, the Lord Buddha did it one time in a sutta. But that's enough for us. Eh? To see that the feelings are not me. Yeah? It's actually not difficult. When there is a feeling, you say, there is a feeling, there is an unpleasant feeling. That means you can observe that feeling. That means somebody must sit there and observe that. So the observer and the feeling are two different objects. Yeah? So are you the feeling or are you observer?
Observer.
Yeah, so. So don't put the feeling as me. Yeah? Separate it out and say there is a feeling. That's a principle of anatta. That's not me, that's not mine, doesn't belong to me. Whatever I can see, whatever I can experience, cannot be me. That comes one step closer to the citta. Yeah? The observer rests inside the citta. And the observer is this sati, yeah, that we develop with concentration. If we have not enough concentration, we will not see that clearly enough. Yeah? If you have enough concentration, the clearer we can see. Yeah? Oh, there's a feeling. Ah, there's a thought. Yeah? Did I invite the thought? No. Yeah? Then you can clearly see, it's not your thought. Yeah? You can't change it. Because the thought already appeared. Yeah? I mean, you can learn that here in the forest monastery with all these animals. The animals come by, and they're gone. You cannot make them change their ways. Yeah? It's just like your thought. They come by, you know, you observe them, and then they go. Feelings come by, you observe them, and they come go. Don't latch on to them. Just see them. There's a feeling, there's an unpleasant feeling, there's a pleasant feeling, there's a neutral feeling. Yeah? There's a thought, there's a memory. Just see them as passing by, just like the chickens passing by, or the turtles passing by. Yeah? Whatever. That's the principle of anatta. And seeing them arising and passing away, it's the principle of impermanence. Whatever we do in the world, we know, is impermanent. We build a house 20 years, sometimes 20 years, or sometimes when we build it very well, yeah, 50 years later, you have to start repairing. If you don't repair it, it disappears in the sand. Yeah? Everything what we do, we constantly have to keep up. We constantly have to repair. Yeah? Otherwise it wouldn't stick. So things, yeah, I mean, we know from trees, you know, I mean, they grow until a certain height, you know, then they fall over and die. Yeah? Flowers, you know, blossom every year, yeah, most of them, blossom every year and then they die. Yeah? Everything what in this world or in this universe is anicca, is impermanent. And that's why we don't get any lasting satisfaction. Now think about something nice that you want to eat. How long does this pleasantness last? As long as it is on the tongue, you know, there's a pleasant sensation. The moment it is here, there's no sensation. And then it stays in the stomach for 24 hours or 36 hours, and we don't have any sensation at all.
Can I ask why you said we need to repair a house?
Huh?
You said we need to repair a house.
Otherwise it falls away.
Yes.
It disappears.
Yes, but the what, as you said...
It's impermanent. Whatever we build is impermanent. Yeah? Yeah? We build it, and then if we don't look after it, you know, it falls to the ground. I mean, with cheap structures, you see it very clearly, yeah? I mean, with more solid build, you know, I mean, it takes longer. But these things we can observe. That's why I said, you know, to observe our own birth and death is very difficult for us. To see the principle of anicca in ourselves, you know, it's very difficult because it's a long time span. So let's look at something, you know. I mean, we grow rice or we grow potatoes. You know, we can see it, you know, growing, growing, growing. Then it's gone, you know, we take it out, you know, and it's gone. Yeah? Then we have to put the seed in, you know, and it grows again. Yeah? So these things, you know, only last for a little while. Yeah? We can see it, you know, with chickens, you know. I mean, they're around for 3, 4, 5, 6 years, you know, and then they die. Yeah? Or the dogs here, you know, 13 years here. 12, 13 years, and then they die. I mean, I've seen so many dogs, you know, passing in my 20 years here. They all are there for a while, you know, and then they just die. So there's nothing, you know, what I want to say is, or what the Lord Buddha wants to say is, there's nothing that is permanent, that is lasting in this universe.
What about if, for example, in childhood, well, let's say you lose some part of your body, you lose an arm, and you know that at least for your life, this life, you won't get it back.
That's right.
For this life, yeah? it's permanent.
Right? Yes.
And how can you, it's difficult for me to imagine, how can you live with this thought? How can you use You understand that it's not permanent, probably in the next life you have this arm back,
yeah.
But still it's really hard to...
Yes, I mean, these things, you know, I mean, I haven't talked, you know, in the beginning we talked a little bit of karma, yeah? I mean, these things will be explained with karma. I mean, if you're born in with no arms, you know, or no legs, you know, it's because of karma. Yeah? So we do have to understand it, but we will talk the next time about it, yeah? So tomorrow, yeah, for instance, we can talk about it. Just let's, you know, let's keep each subject, you know, a little bit separate, yeah? The important thing is, you know, to see things as impermanent. As I said, our own life, it is very difficult for us to see as impermanent. That's why we look, you know, for instance, chickens, or we look at trees, or we look at, you know, trees, sometimes it's also very long. At flowers, yeah? At buildings, yeah? At cars, yeah? Things that we construct, yeah? How long do they last? You know, 18 years maybe at max, you know, and then they're in the trunk yard, yeah? You can't use anything except for the scrap metal, yeah? It's the same with our body, you know? Once we die, then it goes back to Earth. Yeah? Scrap metal, yeah?
I ask you why you give an example of the building a while ago. Mm-hmm. Because, from my understanding, the building, the house, is, I think, a little bit different metaphor with the life. I think that because those living beings are impermanent, but I think the house is more related with metaphor with the cheetah.
No. We like to build houses. Like, you know, people love to build houses, you know, and they love to live in these houses that they build. Yeah? That's, you know, I mean, that's where they get, you know, their sukha or their pleasantness out of it, to build it, yeah? Or to live in it, yeah? Maybe somebody else builds it for them and they love to live in it. So they're getting attached to it, but they don't understand that this building is impermanent, that it will decay over time. Just like, you know, I said, these are a little bit longer to watch, yeah? But what is very short to watch is just your sensation on the tongue. You know, if you drink something, you know, how long does the sensation last? It's also impermanent. So, the shorter it is, the more we see the impermanence. The longer it is, the less we can see the impermanence. That's why it's brought up the house, because it is longer, yeah? But we also do see, or we do know, that if you do not repair a house, it decays very fast. But we normally do repair, so I mean it lasts longer. Yeah? We do repair the body, so I mean it lasts, seems to last a little bit longer. Yeah? We do repair cars, so they seem to last longer. Yeah? But feelings are very short. Yeah? You understand that?
Yeah.
I put it just into relation with the body, where we you can't see your own birth and death, yeah? Because then you really would see the impermanence of it.
Well, I always wanted to, in the future, my dream, I wanted to make a very good my house, because when I build a good house, it lives longer than myself. Mm-hmm. So I always give a relation with myself, my space.
Yes, but that's why I said
you point the right foot.
That is the dream of most of the people, and it does work out if you build the house well. You know, your daughters or your sons can live in it, but they still have to maintain it. So they have to repair it, yeah? If it is not well built, you know, they have constantly to repair it, yeah? The roof, or, you know, the roof leaks, you know, this is, you know, it's too cold, isolation is not good, you know, the windows break, you know, and the door knob, you know, I mean, it breaks, yeah? I mean, you see how many things in a house break, yeah? I mean, you lived in a house before, I mean, how often do we repair? We do have to look after the house, yeah? I mean, we have to dust it, to sweep it, to clean it, you know, and, you know, once in a while to paint it. How long does paint last, yeah? It all has, you know, it has a definite cycle of life, you know, and that is called anicca, impermanent. Things are impermanent. Whatever you do, don't think things are permanent, yeah? The only thing what you can assume is permanent is this citta. And that's why we want to find the way to the citta. Because that is the one who survives the death of the body, who survives the death of feelings or memories or the death, you know, of houses and cars and things like that. So the Lord Buddha, you know, made it really for us to understand, you know, I mean, don't hang your heart on impermanent things. Hang your heart onto something that lasts. Yeah? Don't polish the car. In other words, don't polish too much the car. Yeah? Take care of the driver that he doesn't wreck the car. Huh? You understand that? If you don't train the driver, you know, I mean, the car is wrecked very soon. Yeah. So with the body, you know, if you don't train the driver, the chitta, you know, to take care of the body, I mean, the body goes very, very fast. Yeah. Things like that. That is the whole idea. Yeah? Of course, we dream. You know, I mean, people dream, yeah, that they build a family. You know, I mean, they have daughters, they have sons. You know, and that. Through them, they will live in eternity. Yeah? Then there come sons, you know, grandsons, you know, grand-grandsons, and so on. And they seem, you know, to have a eternal life, but it's not true. Yeah? Because each son or grandson is an individual. Yeah? It has a relationship to us, but not so much. Yeah? And they also live, you know, for a short time. Yeah? 70, 80 years. Okay?
I think it was really good for a day, but just my question. When you advise me for the Buddha, the karma, mm-hmm. I haven't tried, but I think I know it really gonna work because I think I don't really 100% understand why that mantra works, but kind of understand. Can you tell me a little bit more about the mantra, how it works?
It is, I mean, we put our attention onto something, onto one object. We want to come, you know, we want to really find, you know. I mean, we want to find the chitta, yeah? or the one who observes everything. Yeah? If we don't fix it to a certain point, we don't know if the mind wanders off. And if we don't know if the mind wanders off, we cannot bring it back. So it will never get really concentrated. Yeah? If you don't have a point of focus. Yeah. It's just like, you know, when you have a magnifying glass. Yeah. I mean, the rays of the sun are not very hot. You put a big magnifying glass there, and then you point it to one point. Then it becomes powerful. And that's the one thing that we want. We want to point to the chitta, because then the chitta becomes powerful. I mean, think about it, you know, I mean, you're all probably familiar with computers. Yeah? You run 100 different tasks on your computer, and each task, you know, is slow. Now you delete 99 tasks, and the computer becomes really fast, becomes really powerful. Yeah? And that's the same thing. If we cannot concentrate on just one task, yeah? And that is the Buddha, or that is the attention on the breath, our mind will not become powerful. It wastes all its time, you know, by thinking about this, thinking about that, you know, doing this task, doing that task. Yeah? And that's why this mantra works. Yeah? Whenever the mind goes off, we bring it back to the Buddha. Off, bring it back to the Buddha. And so the mind really stays on the Buddha.
Yeah, but the what I'm curious about this power of mantra,
yeah,
is even though I don't know much about the meaning of the mantra, it works somehow. Like, you know, I understand. I know if this material is magnifying glass, I will know this material will work as a concentration. Yeah. But even though I don't know much about this material, it works somehow.
Yeah. The problem is that through our studies and through our intellectual approach to the world, we forgot the basis. The chitta knows it will work. Yeah? There's some knowing it will work, you know? I mean, because it works, yeah? And you just need to try it out, and it works, yeah? But if you don't, if you go wander off, you know, I mean, of course, it will be hard, you know, to make it working, yeah? No, I mean, there is something, you know, in the chitta, yeah? I mean, who brought you here to this temple? Yeah? You didn't know anything about this basis, yeah? I mean, something brought you here to this temple, yeah? And then it was actually a chitta, yeah? Because there is something else, you know, I mean, there's not only this thing, you know, from this life in your chitta. There are so many experiences from so many different lives, yeah? Just think about you, you know, five lives earlier, you've been a monk. And somebody has given you a mantra. And you worked it, for 20, 30 years, yeah? And then you forgot about it, and now I tell you about the mantra, and, yes, it worked. Don't think, you know, this is your only existence, yeah? Step back, what you know, and see so many, yeah? I mean, we train. You wouldn't be here, really. I can promise you, you wouldn't be here if you didn't have, yeah, a certain level of experience.
So, you are saying myself is impermanent, but mantra is permanent.
No, yourself, you know, I mean, your chitta is permanent. The chitta is permanent. I mean, I talk about that later, you know, I mean, we can talk about the chitta another time, yeah? Because each subject needs to be, you know, I mean, needs to be handled differently, karma or chitta, yeah? The chitta itself is permanent. What is not permanent is the things that grab hold of the chitta, yeah? And that are called kilesas, like tiredness, restlessness, boredom, things like that, yeah? Greed, hate, things like that. Yeah? They are not permanent. But they grab this chitta. Yeah? Just like the rays of the sun grab a piece of water, you know, and pull it up. Yeah? And then let's go off it. Yeah? Once the water drop, you know, as long as the water drop, you know, is the water drop, you know, it thinks of, oh, I'm big, I'm beautiful, I'm this, I'm that, I'm that. Yeah? The moment it goes back to its essence, you know, I mean, just it's water.
I mean, I react with this mantra,
yeah?
Even though I don't know clearly or exactly about this mantra, I react because you are saying that I was related before, and I knew it before. That's why I react.
Yeah? There's so much, you know, in our chitta. You know, I mean, it is a wonder, yeah? What is all stored there, huh? The memories from all our past lives is stored there. Yeah? And sometimes, you know, it can come through. Yeah? Sometimes, you know, it can lay hidden, yeah? So, with the Buddha, just do it, you know, and see, yeah? I mean, your parents didn't tell you how to learn to walk, yeah? Yeah? So, I mean, you ask your parents, if you could talk before you walk, you ask your parents, how should I believe you that I can walk, you know, if I do this or that, yeah? They said, just try it, yeah? And then the child tries and tries and tries and tries, you know, and, oh, yes, it does work.
Yeah, for me it makes sense that even though I don't know about that meaning of the mantra, I remember, I remember that I experienced this mantra. That's why I react. It works for me.
That's fine. So, but stop at here, yeah? I mean, now we're 3 o'clock, there's sweeping, you know, and it also do one day at a time, yeah?
Right.
So, do your Buddha, you know, and you will see there are lots of difficulties and you have to fight them, yeah?
I do. Thank you.